This is Crossroads, a Get Religion podcast.
We return to the subject again and again here on Crossroads that the media's coverage of religion is deserving of not only serious critique, but from the perspective of someone who wants to read accurate information about religion, but what if your only concern were journalism? Does the media's failure to cover religion well, or sometimes even at all, does it create what someone has recently called an anti-journalism? Greetings and welcome to Crossroads. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Joining us this week is Terry Mattingly. He's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
This term, anti-journalism, emerged from a recent Getting Religion conference in Great Britain. What can you tell us about it?
Well, it's really interesting when you consider where this charge that ignoring religion is anti-journalism. It came from someone that you would not have expected to say something like that. It came from a leader in the British press, a man by the name of Richard Porritt, who's the former editor of the London Evening Standard, and also of the British Press Association, which would be the British equivalent of, say, the Associated Press. So a very important person. And he just simply stated that many journalists are scared of covering religion. They're scared of making mistakes, but that journalists are not supposed to shy away from the most important subjects simply because they're scared to cover them or that they're complicated. And he ended up saying, essentially, what we've been saying at Get Religion for coming up on 11 years this coming Monday, and that is that you can't understand real news in the lives of real people living in the real world unless you're willing to contemplate the power of religion. That simply stated, the so-called secularization thesis that has dominated so much of academia and public life for more than a century, which is a thesis that the world is basically growing more and more scientific and logical and thus less and less religious. The problem is that there doesn't seem to be any evidence that that's true outside of maybe strategic locations in elite culture in Europe and the West. The rest of the world, if anything, seems to be getting more religious in some ways. It doesn't mean it's the same religion or it's as traditional as it used to be, but there's no evidence that the power of religion is fading. So what this man meant by saying that it's anti-journalism to ignore religion or not to get religion is that it's anti-journalism to not be willing to ask the questions that are actually related to a story. It's anti-journalism to ignore the facts on the ground as they're actually happening. And it's anti-journalism to be so biased against a subject that you're not even willing to cover the major stories that are happening around you. And the conference that unfolded in England, and I really wish I could have been there, obviously when you look at a title like Getting Religion, the people there were well aware of our blog and well aware of what we do. And in fact, our former leader, the late Arne Fjellsted, was a major figure in the development of that conference before his death this past November. I mean, so there are some connections there, and gosh, I wish I could have been there.
You mentioned, and I think this is something that we really haven't discussed in any depth, at least that we haven't discussed here, and that is sometimes the failure to cover religion is based upon perhaps a journalistic instinct of, you said, fear of not getting it right.
Right.
Go into a little more depth with that, if you would.
I'll give you a quaint image for it. The very first full-time job I had in journalism, I was a copy editor in Champaign, Illinois, at the Champaign, Illinois News Gazette. And we would sit there on the copy desk all day long. And the news editor had a phrase that he used at the desk, and that phrase was a green frog. And a green frog is a reader who's very upset about something, and they're basically irrational, and he doesn't have time to deal with them. Well, basically, anybody religious who called the paper about anything to complain, he would roll his eyes, put his hand over the mouthpiece of the phone and say, "Mattingly, there's a religion green frog on line two. Take them." Now, what he meant by that was that he just didn't want to deal with religion at all. He didn't want to get into the details. He didn't want to know what the paper did that was wrong. Just simply talking about the subject of religion at all was something that he didn't consider relevant to journalism. In other words, religious people are basically crazy, and what motivates them are private beliefs that should stay private. So we're back to this secularization thesis. Now, if you asked him if he was anti-religion, he would say no. And he might even have some religious beliefs. But the key to it is that there were certain subjects in life that were real, and there were certain subjects in life that were pretend. And religion was the epitome of the pretend world, and politics is the epitome of the real world. So can you see now why journalists get so upset when religion gets involved in politics? Their world that they care about of real stuff, politics, is being invaded by irrational green frogs who basically just want to come in and yell at them because they either don't care about religion, they don't understand religion, and they are not at all interested in the facts about these religion subjects. But at the same time, if you're a journalist and you know that you don't know the facts about a particular subject, and you know that you don't care about the facts, aren't you going to be afraid of covering that subject for fear of making a mistake? And then suddenly you have all kinds of green frogs on the phone yelling at you? Do you see the circle?
Yeah.
Thus we have this quote from Richard Porritt. Many news desks shun real religion news because they believe the subject is too tricky to get across properly, and the fear of getting anything wrong is too great. Lapido Media Director Jenny Taylor is even blunter. She said, far too many journalists and far too many foreign diplomats and government officials, they fear dealing with religion because they fear making a mistake that could cost them their career. So this gets to the flip side of this conference's coin. It wasn't just about journalism. It was about that increasingly many of the people who are in charge not only of foreign diplomacy, but who are in charge of issues of security, safety, security in our culture, they're scared of religion too. And because they don't know enough about religion, they don't know the facts, they haven't done their homework, Dr. Taylor says they don't even know the ground they're standing on when they turn in circles and look at the world around them. They don't even understand how religion has shaped the basics. An example from recent headlines that I find totally fascinating. I've read this thesis in a couple of different publications, and that is the whole unfolding of the Islamic State is nothing more than certain tribes within Sunni Islam taking back the tribal territories that were naturally theirs. And you say, well, okay, then why didn't they have it before? Well, because the people in Britain and other Western nations who drew the lines in the Middle East were convinced in creating a Middle East that didn't take religious divisions into account, because everybody knew religion was getting weaker and weaker and weaker. So they designed the Middle East the way secular people in the West would want to see the Middle East be. The only problem is that religion isn't getting weaker and weaker and weaker in the Middle East. And in fact, I mean, this is a region where people have unbelievably long attention spans when it comes to religious issues and differences. It's as the old saying goes, and it's true, this is a place where in certain cemeteries in Jerusalem, they bury the dead with their feet facing in the right direction so that when they rise at the last trump, they'll be facing the right direction to battle the people on the other side who are facing the, you know, they bury the dead to be ready for combat, you know, over religious issues. it's the epitome of the secularization thesis. Religion is getting weaker and weaker and weaker. Thus, we don't want to take it seriously. But then all around us is evidence that it's not getting weaker, and there are stories that demand to be covered, but we're scared to cover them because we're afraid of making a mistake, and the whole thing just goes around and around and around. It's a catch-22.
So what kind of – first, let's talk just in terms of the news that came out of this conference. What kind of solutions, if any, were proposed at the Getting Religion Conference in England to be, especially, and you just pointed out, in Great Britain, this is a deeply rooted, not just with journalism, but with politics and everything else, a deeply rooted belief, the secularization theory. What kind of what kind of solutions were proposed?
Well, first of all, they've just got to understand that if we want the public to have more media literacy, at some point it would help if our elites had more religious literacy. And so Lapido Media is a network dedicated to trying to get diplomats and journalism and journalists to face the fact that they are not religiously literate, that they, whatever their religious beliefs, they simply don't have enough facts in their head to understand what's going on, and that they have to know that. And the point that was added to that, not only is it bad journalism, when you're dealing with situations like what's unfolding in France and everywhere else, it's dangerous to have people making crucial decisions about journalism and public life if they don't actually understand these things. So the message that came out of this conference I thought was kind of interesting because it was twofold. There are some people who seem to think religion is the only cause of trouble. All bad things happen because of religion. And there are some people who take the secularization thesis and say, well, religion isn't actually the problem. This is just tribal differences, economic differences. This is social change. And the people may be shouting Allahu Akbar as they run in with their machine guns, but this isn't actually religion. This is just political violence. In other words, religion isn't real, thus religion can't cause the problem, thus we don't have to cover religion. We'll just cover it like it's politics, cover it like it's economics, cover it like it's tribal issues in Nigeria. It doesn't actually have anything to do with one form of Sharia conflicting with another versus, you know, a large Christian culture in southern Nigeria. Religion isn't real, so we'll ignore it. At the other side is religion is a bunch of crazy people, and it's really, really, really dangerous. And religion is uniquely dangerous, whereas science and economics and all these other topics, they're real, and you have good ones, you have bad ones, but it's not really, they're not really dangerous. Religion is dangerous. It's the only problem. It's the big problem. This conference made a point that the truth is somewhere in between, that you will never, ever understand most of these conflicts that are unfolding around the world, especially in our generation, related to conflicts inside of Islam, between competing schools of thought in Islam. You'll never understand them without understanding the religious element. But most of the time, you'll have to understand that religious element as it's connected to other forces. Maybe the rise or fall of a particular regime, a new political regime comes in, and they decide to change the law, and that law affects some religious groups more than others, and thus you have new animosities and new bitterness spring out. And so, yes, the political element is real, but so is the religious element. Or maybe there's rapid economic changes which make the poor even poorer than they were before, and you have this sudden uprising of the dominant religious perspective of the very poor. I'm thinking Islam, more radicalized forms of Islam in Egypt, for example, against their ruling elites. So can you understand that without understanding the economic reality? No. Can you understand that without understanding the recent history of Islam in that country? No. Can you understand why so many of the Coptic Christians are members of certain educated elites without understanding their religious history? No. If you don't know these facts, are you going to mess up the story? Yes. And round and round.
This is, I mean, you have obviously, as you've laid it out here, an extraordinarily complex situation.
Right.
And it requires of, I mean, this is the kind of thing that you have to start correcting. If I'm not mistaken, at journalism schools at the very grassroots of the journalistic enterprise.
Yeah.
How would you do it?
Well, I mean, the main thing is the people who run newsrooms need to treat religion exactly the way they treat any other specialty that they respect. Now, if you're, you and I have talked about this before. Remember the famous job notice two decades ago at the Washington Post when they wanted a religion reporter and they said the ideal candidate is not necessarily religious nor an expert on religion?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. Well, I can't stress that too much. It's the second half of that equation that drives me crazy. Here you are at one of the top newspapers in America. If you advertised an open religion beat, you would have fantastically qualified people apply. Yet you have defined that the ideal candidate is someone who has not had experience covering religion. Why? Try to imagine the Washington Post having an opening for a Supreme Court reporter and them saying, the ideal candidate does not have a law degree, is not really interested in the law, and doesn't know anything at all about it, and has never covered it. That's the ideal candidate to be our new Supreme Court reporter. Or how about someone who's going to cover the National Football League? The ideal reporter for this beat. Note the word ideal. The ideal reporter does not like football, does not go to football games, and really has never done anything to learn anything at all about it. How about classical music critic? The ideal candidate for our position on the fine arts beat does not go to concerts, doesn't know anything about fine. I could go on and on with this, right?
Sure.
But you see the answer to your question. One of the ways that you improve this is that our very best publications, our major news networks, they hire qualified people to cover religion. And then it becomes a professional standard. But as it is right now, none of the major networks have a religion correspondent. The religion beat is endangered at many of our elite publications. Now, there are exceptions. There has been a major attempt at the New York Times lately to reorganize. And the Washington Post just hired a second religion reporter. And I think she's fabulously qualified, not the least of which because she used to write for Get Religion. You know, there are people out there who will apply for these jobs, and if you interview them, you will hire qualified journalists who will improve the coverage on the beat. But in that way, you improve religion coverage by doing exactly what you would do for any other subject. Want better political reporting? Hire veteran, award-winning political reporters with law degrees and degrees in political science, and give them the budget and space to work and let them go. You'll get better coverage. Want to get better arts coverage? Get people that know the field of art. Want to get someone to cover the law better at the Supreme Court? Get someone who is both a qualified journalist, maybe they've even won awards in the subject, and let them cover the subject. Let them do it. You could do the exact same thing in religion. The problem is that editors don't do that. They act like religion is a uniquely stupid, dangerous, or meaningless topic. It's kind of hard to be dangerous and meaningless at the same time.
So you said earlier that this is this kind of anti-journalism has such far-reaching implications and consequences in society that it actually does make the world more dangerous itself. Talk a little bit about that. How so?
Well, I mean, just think it from a diplomatic perspective. Would the Middle East be more stable today if the people who drew the lines decades ago had taken into account the religious divisions and differences that have existed for generations and centuries? Now, you might have those states conflicting with each other, but would you have Iraq blowing up? Would you have massacres in the Nineveh Plain? Maybe not. I mean, so then you get a region like Syria, which isn't very logically defined either, which is why the Islamic State was able to sweep into parts of Syria and everybody greeted them like heroes, or at least went along with them because they recognized that these folks represented the dominant religious perspective of that particular region. It's dangerous when diplomats don't understand religion and try to name one of the great events of the 20th century that very few Americans know about that in which millions of people died, or at least thousands of people died, it might have been millions, when they carved apart Pakistan and India, Britain acted like religion really didn't matter. They were going to try to create a Muslim state and an Indian state. The problem is that India today remains one of the largest Muslim nations in the world in terms of population, as an embattled, massive majority. And meanwhile, how are the Hindus that are still left in the geographical borders of Pakistan, how are they going to do with a new all-Muslim empowered population? The result was astonishingly bloody massacres by both sides. But hey, the British were saying, you know, religion's not all that important. We can pull this off. It's dangerous. It's dangerous to not understand that Saudi Arabia has pumped millions and millions of dollars into Wahhabi Islam education projects and mosques and think tanks all over the world, and, of course, among their own people. Wahhabi Islam happens to be very, very close in viewpoint to Islam as defined by the Islamic State, which gets us to a story that we're not hearing much talking about right now. The king of Saudi Arabia just died. The regime, according to some people, is greatly weakened. Their army may or may not be divided. What happens if the Islamic State decides to take Mecca?
And I mean, just the fact that you point that story out, and I imagine many of our listeners are saying, what? And suddenly realizing the implications kind of sets this entire thing into perspective.
Yeah, look at the map. Look at where the Islamic State is right now, and look at the direction of their movements, and try to imagine if they took a solid swing toward invading Saudi Arabia and going after Mecca. Then contemplate what percentage of the Saudi Arabian army is actually sympathetic to the goals of the Islamic State. There's a reason the Syrian army fell completely apart, threw their guns down, handed their weapons to the Islamic State, and in many cases switched to the other side. It's because their religious point of view was similar to the Islamic State. Now, does that mean that all Syrian Muslims are like that? Of course not. Does that mean that all Saudi Arabian Muslims would have the same perspective? Of course not. But what if enough did for a revolution to start or to back an invasion by the Islamic State? It would really help if the diplomats and the journalists who are dealing with that topic knew enough about these differences and knew enough about the past history to be able to explain some of this to us, or to even think that this is news in the first place.
Let's go back to the J school for a second. What should change there by way of plotting a future course for journalism when it comes to media coverage to avoid this kind of thing we've been talking about?
Well, I don't know if many secular journalism schools are going to have entire classes dedicated to religion. Although one of the best in the world, which is the Columbia School of Journalism in New York, has such a class. Northwestern, another good school, has one. And there may or may not be a class at Missouri. I haven't checked lately. But the Religion News Writers Association is based at the University of Missouri. So I know there's a strong presence there of people who are interested in this field. I don't know if separate classes or something is necessary. What I think would be more important, especially in an age dominated by the internet, where we have more and more specialty publications of all kinds, I think journalism schools could at least have one or more classes that focus on how you cover specialty topics, everything from science to medicine to ethics to business, and yes, put religion in there, and teach a respect for the kinds of highly refined knowledge that it takes to cover those beats. And this, at that point, simply treat religion with the same respect that you do for any of these other major topics. If maybe we could pound that in at the level of the journalism school.
So what we're talking about here is undoing how much poor journalism and how much failure to cover this. I mean, how far back does this problem go? Give us a little historical perspective as we wind down our conversation.
Well, it goes back forever. There was a blip of very highly developed very positive developments on the beat during the 90s. We had fantastic religion reporting being done at National Public Radio. We had the beat was full at some major places. But the current economic and advertising crisis in journalism is cutting newsroom staffs. And when you start cutting a pie, the people who are in charge of cutting the pie and handing out the pie tend to give it to the areas that they like the most or respect the most. So if you thought we had a problem getting religion covered in mainstream journalism before, throw in an economic crisis and it's going to be even worse. But you also had the age in the 50s and 60s where this was called the church beat. And it was basically once a week on the back pages. And the Associated Press had one religion reporter named George Cornell, whose job was to cover basically all religion on all of planet Earth. So it's not like there was a golden age and then we lost it. This battle has come and gone. My cover story at a magazine, a journal called The Quill, religion reporting, no room in the inn, religion news. That cover story in 1983 got more letters to the editor in response than any cover story that journal had ever had in its history of a century or so. It hit a nerve. And the Freedom Forum has done major studies, and other groups has as well. I'm not alone in sounding this buzzer, believe me. So the argument has been going on for quite a few decades now. But in our current economic hard times in journalism, where advertising is, and we'll face it, how much do you like internet advertising, right? How much do you like pop-ups? The digital advertising crisis has created an economic climate that's making it even harder to cover religion and similar lesser-known topics. I wish I could say something other than that, but that's simply the truth.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he is founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thank you very much for your time.
Glad to talk to you again.
I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you next week. Thanks for listening to Crossroads.
Crossroads is a joint production of GetReligion.org and Issues Etc.